Hello and welcome to GCSE Revision Pod, the Language Pod Round 2.
Yep, so for those of you listening, we are specifically focusing this on AQA English Language, but obviously some of the skills that we study may be appropriate for other exam boards.
I like that you address those of you listening. I mean, I don't know who else would be hearing that.
It's early in the morning.
It's good to be specific.
Those of you not listening, well, you can go away.
We hate you. Okay, so
they wouldn't hear that though, 'cause they're not listening.
This is the paradox of the whole thing, isn't it?
So, question 3 for AQA Language Paper 1.
Absolutely. Last episode, we looked purely at question 2. Now we are moving on to purely question 3. It is worth saying that with this episode, more so than usual, it's really, really important that you work with the handout. It's always important that you work with the handout, but particularly today, we are going to be working with the whole extract. We don't really have time in the podcast to read the entire extract out, so it is crucial that as well as listening, you've also downloaded the handout from the bio so you can follow exactly what we're doing.
And for the purpose of this episode, even if you're listening on your phone, you could just click on the link in the podcast if you're listening on iTunes, or if you're listening on Spotify, you could paste out the link and put it into your
copy
browser.
Copy and paste the link in.
And have it up as you listen, just because we'll tell you when to pause, but it's really important for question 3 that you've read the whole thing, because we're looking at structure.
Exactly.
Today.
Last podcast, we zoomed you right in. We talked about being forensic. We talked about going in for an incredibly close micro analysis of the language that's used.
For question 2.
For question 2. Now you need to take a step right back and you need to look at the shape, the overall arc and flow of the entire piece, right?
So the first thing to start with is actually what's the difference between language and structure? Because lots and lots of students get these confused. And as a result, lose lots of marks. So, I mean, let's start with before we even get to that though, let's quickly kind of start with the basics. It's worth 8 marks. Mm-hmm. So again, like question 2, you only really want to spend about 12 to 15 minutes. You do not want to craft a perfect response over 30 minutes at the expense of the other questions 4 and 5.
12 to 15 minutes including reading time.
Including reading time. Although, obviously, you probably would have read the whole text
at the beginning.
At the beginning,
which
of
would
it.
Mean so, you'd have slightly less. So yeah, approximately around that
approximately
time.
Approximately 12 to 15. So, one of the key messages, and this is on your handout, I put this on the top tips for analysing the structure of an extract. One of the key messages from the exam board, reading the examiner's reports from AQA, is make sure you don't overcomplicate things.
Yeah.
On the basic level, what you're considering when you're talking about the structure of a text is where do things happen, what happens, and why does it happen there?
Absolutely. Where does the writer shift your focus? I think actually thinking visually can really help with this question.
Imagining like a camera's, imagining the camera's following. What is the camera focusing on in each?
So if this extract was a film, where is the camera pointing, and when does it, more importantly, when does it change and why?
So things you might look in on. When does it zoom in from something big to something small? Is there a sudden or gradual introduction of new characters? Does it move from the inside to the wider world? Does it combine external actions with internal thoughts? Does it switch between different points of view? Is there anything that repeats or is developed? Or is there anything that you read later on that explains something you read at the beginning, that changes your understanding of what you've already read? Is there perhaps a circular structure? Does it return to what you looked at the beginning, at the end? Are there any sentences that have an impact on the piece as a whole? Are there any sentences that kind of encapsulate, sum up everything that's in the passage?
Mm-hmm.
So examiners are looking for words that will indicate a focus on structure. These are things like at the start, in the middle, at this point, later. Mm. But obviously you don't get marks for simply identifying structural devices. What you've got to do, as we said, is where does things shift? What do they shift to? But most importantly, why does the writer do it? And in terms of the why, you need to avoid those awful sentences like this makes the reader read on, this catches the reader's attention, and you want to be specific. And when I'm talking about the why, just like question 2 actually, I think about what does it reveal about characters?
Yeah.
What does it reveal about themes? What does it foreshadow, so set up about something that will happen later in the story? What does it say about the tone of the piece? So try and be as specific as you can.
Exactly. Looking at those things, taking that step back and looking for those big moments is crucial here. You are not going to have time to comment on every tiny little shift in the extract. You are looking for the big moments of change, the big transitions, and thinking at the forefront of your mind, why did the writer choose to do this at this point?
Yeah. And my advice would be, think something from the beginning, something from the middle, and do look at the last few sentences. There's always, there's generally something interesting in that very last paragraph. How does the writer end? Why do they end like that? So yes. I've put here like a possible structure. The truth is, I would probably write slightly shorter paragraphs for this than maybe some of your other answers. And each paragraph I'd focus on a different kind of structural feature.
Yes.
Gives you a really easy way to organise your answer. So we're talking probably at least three paragraphs, three short paragraphs, beginning, middle and end. But you might have four if there's more interesting structural features.
And actually the examples we've given are quite long, aren't they? They're possibly longer than you would create in the actual exam, but what we've tried to show you is everything you kind of could say of value.
Yes. And actually what you need to do, the most important thing, is practice writing what you are able to write in time conditions and tailoring your response. Because actually, if you didn't have time to write about four structural features, cut one of them out and write about three. Much better to do fewer examples but do them in loads of detail than to skim over everything.
100%.
So if we look at my part on the sheet, it says how to structure a response, some things to look at. I put a series of questions on here, things to ask the text as you read it. So it's incredibly important that you're doing something I call active reading, which is as you read, you get a pen in your hand or a highlighter and you're annotating and underlining things that jump out at you. So I would probably start my question three with, if there is an overall structural thing that you notice, mention it. So if, for example, there is a turning point, a shift, a transition from one thing to another, you could start with a sentence kind of explaining that.
Or tension builds
towards a climax.
Flashbacks are used to clarify why the character is there, or whatever the overarching thing is.
Equally, if you don't spot something overall, it's absolutely fine just to start by looking at the beginning.
Yeah.
So how does the extract begin? What does this set up about the story? Does it foreshadow anything? So does it predict anything that was come? Does it create a sense of equilibrium? That means there's no tension. Is there a false sense of equilibrium? So we think things are okay, but this turns out to be false. Or is there disequilibrium? Is there loads of tension? Is someone shooting at him right from the start of the story?
It's a good place to start from.
Is it told in chronological order? So in time order? Or are there any flashbacks or flash forwards? And I've put the fancy Greek words on your sheet, but again, you don't get marks for terminology.
No.
If it's told in the first person, does the narrator seem reliable? Do we trust them?
Yeah.
So your next
we're going to come on to that with one of our examples
definitely.
Today, aren't we?
So paragraph, once you've kind of done that first paragraph, you won't talk about all of those different questions. What you've got to decide as an individual sitting this exam is which of those questions are most interesting.
Yeah.
So if there's a flashback, you're looking at that. If there's an unreliable narrator, you're looking at that. Mm-hmm. But you're thinking, why does the writer start by doing that?
Yes.
So it's all about why do they start? It's not about the features, it's about why do they start with it. So then each paragraph will be anytime something changes, that's a new paragraph. So paragraph two, are there any shifts in perspective?
And they could be things from like perspective, big place to small places.
Yeah, it could be, is there any repetition? Mm-hmm. Are there any moments of foreshadowing?
Right, that's hinting at things that might come in the future.
Quite an interesting one. Are there any motifs, symbols that are repeated again and again?
Is light used again and again to represent love? I don't know who would do that, but yeah.
Silly Shakespeare. As the extract goes on, this is perhaps my favourite one, is does anything that you read change your understanding of what you've already read? A great paragraph would be, it's only in paragraph three that we realise blah, blah, blah about him. And then perhaps the end of this, how does the extract end? What are the last lines or words? Why are they significant? What do they encapsulate, sum up about the piece? Does it end with a new sense of equilibrium, a false equilibrium? Does it have a circular structure? Does the ending mirror the beginning? But above all, I've put this in capital letters on your sheet. Every paragraph is, does anything change? So what? Why has the writer made these choices?
Absolutely. If you keep that in the forefront of your mind, you will do okay. And really think you're almost physically moving back from the thing that you're reading. You know, you actually want to see the whole shape of the piece on the page, looking at when the changes happen in terms of where they are in the extracts even can be quite valuable. So really discipline yourself to move away from that close focused analysis and take in the overall extract.
Yeah. So we're not looking in at the connotations of words for this question.
No. Nope.
We're zooming out and saying, why does the writer begin by focusing on that particular thing? Why does the writer begin by doing this?
Why do things change and where do we end up?
And what do they reveal about character, theme, big ideas?
Exactly.
So the first question three, is an extract from a wonderful novel by Hilary Mantel, which you should read when your exams are over. It's all about this man named Thomas Cromwell, who is in the court of King Henry VIII. And this is an extract from the very beginning of the novel. Here they've spent the day hunting, with hawks and horses. So hawks are birds of prey. And the hawks are named after Cromwell's dead family. Here's a top tip, listeners. I did this with a mock in class last year, thankfully, not this year. And students in my class failed to read that top bit. And they thought that the hawks were his dead family.
Right.
And they thought it was a supernatural tale about a man who's given birth to baby, to like birds. It was weird.
Yeah.
Weird and screwed up.
It would be potentially a good
book. Oh, great book. Yeah. But my point being is, in this exam, a top tip is make sure there will always be that bit at the top in a little box saying, what is it summarising what the source is about?
Yeah. That's
read
a lot of your work for you.
So carefully, because it will tell you. Even if you're finding the extract difficult to understand, it will tell you what it's all about.
Yes. Now, as I said, we aren't going to read the extract out for you because it's relatively long and we'll go on too long in terms of the podcast. But please, whatever you're doing, wherever you're listening, please pause now, go to the handout and look at example A, read the extract from Bring Up the Bodies, and then rejoin us once you are done. Welcome back.
If you didn't listen to it, we are going to summarise it, but you will not get as much from it as you would do if you've read it. So, let's start by summarising what happens in each paragraph, just so you have an idea, then we'll analyse it and see what we could analyse. So, it begins with the sentence, his children are falling from the sky. But it becomes clear as the paragraph goes on that the children he's referring to are these birds of prey, these hawks, that are named after his dead family. So, he is going hunting with hawks, so that's using hawks to hunt little birds. And he's hunting with Henry VIII.
Yes.
So he begins by describing this violent world of what they've done this summer. The hawks kind of ripping apart these little birds, and how much they've enjoyed doing that.
They've been having a great time, haven't they? The men of the court with their king. It's all been enjoyment
in the 16th century.
Yeah.
And then the passage moves. They return to the palace at Whitehall, and the protagonist, Cromwell, talks about how he's going to do his real work when the king's gone to bed. He's going to do his paperwork.
And also, I think we get this, before that slightly, we get a description of how simple the hawks' lives are, which is quite interesting, I think. It's kind of juxtaposed.
Yeah, we're not analysing it yet, sir.
Sorry.
We'll get on to that.
I will hold back.
And then the extract ends with this moment as the sun's setting. He's standing next to Henry VIII outside... outside, and you know, he realises it's the end of the summer, it's the start of the autumn, it's a time of change. So the question is, this extract has been taken from the start of a novel. How has the writer structured the text to interest you as a reader? What does the writer focus your attention on at the beginning of the source? How and why the writer changes this focus as the source develops? And are there any other structural features that interest you?
Cool, very. And this is actually the material that AQA published in terms of the exam itself, so this is exactly the kind of extract you could be given and the kind of question you could be given.
There is a slight trick in the wording of the question. When it says to interest you as a reader, avoid in your explanation simply saying, "This interests me as a reader because."
Yeah.
You know, you want to be precise. That what's the writer setting up about the characters and the themes that makes it interesting.
So, crucially as well, don't just say, "I didn't find it interesting." It's not, if you didn't find it interesting, fine, but how did the writer try to make it interesting? What has
and
the
also,
writer done?
The truth is, it will have been interesting to someone. So you're focusing on the writer and not yourself. What is the writer doing and why are they doing the things that they're doing?
Yeah, forget about whether they were successful in terms of you personally. What have they done?
Yeah, so the first thing we're going to look at is, you know, what is focused on at the beginning of this extract and what might we analyse?
So first of all, your attention is taken to what I described as the brutal majesty of the birds. So these birds are by token both wonderfully sort of beautiful, graceful beings, but also these kind of vicious killers, right? And I wonder if there's an element of foreshadowing in there that perhaps there are difficult times ahead, or that there's some kind of conflict to come, perhaps. And then also, interestingly, the concept of them being named after Cromwell's wife and children is brought in. What kind of tone does that create?
Yeah, because I think there's a really important point. I will look at how we can word this in a moment. But I think a really important structural point is the fact that it begins with this sentence, his children are falling from the sky. We learn, of course, that these hawks are named for his dead family. And this becomes, there's this strange tone, therefore, this almost mournful tone. In the extract that becomes, this is not simply about a man celebrating the court of Henry VIII, it's actually a man who's also suffered a personal loss, and there's this juxtaposition between the freedom of the birds flying high in the air and the bones of his family that he describes as being sunk in London clay.
That's a fantastic point, isn't it? You've got the, if you imagine the visual aspect of it, the freedom of the sky combined with the permanence of your bones being in the earth.
So we could kind of phrase that in an analysis by saying the writer begins by focusing the reader's attention on the brutal majesty of the birds. By making the hawks the initial focus of the piece, the reader immediately understands they might have some deeper significance. Perhaps the way they combine beauty with the instinct of a merciless killer foreshadows something about the characters watching them hunt or about the nature of the court of Henry VIII. Yet equally, it's important to note that, given we later learn the Burns are named after Cromwell's wife, sister and children who have all died, the apparent freedom of the hawks is clearly juxtaposed with the grim reality that his family are, in fact, now buried, sunk in London clay.
And the complexity continues, doesn't it? Because as we move on, the tone changes when we move from the skies to the ground. The writer takes our attention from the vast freedom of the skies, moves our attention onto the men who are, of course, locked to the ground.
So in terms of structuring our answer, that's a shift. And so we're thinking, let's start a new paragraph in our answer here.
And talk about the change in tone primarily, right?
Yeah. So we'll focus on the celebratory atmosphere, the use of the pathetic fallacy, the sunshine to symbolise the enjoyment they had that summer.
Yeah.
But also how this is juxtaposed with the sense of officialdom and urgency that Cromwell is aware of the paperwork he's got to do. Things will not always be so relaxed.
So the shifting tone kind of initially, the men are equal in their enjoyment. You've got the freedom of the birds, the free life of the birds in the sky. Then you've got the men on the ground enjoying this freedom and the sort of celebration of the hunt. But then you get this reminder, you get this shift in tone that tells you that actually there is work to do. Life is not all fun and fun and games.
And we put the point in here on your model answer, which we're not going to read now. But we could therefore look at this as being a decision to juxtapose the freedom of the birds with actually the sense that the men have this freedom in the summer, but that freedom's soon going to come to an end.
Yes.
So actually, perhaps there is a hint of jealousy.
The men are facing both a literal and a metaphorical winter at this point.
And I think that brings me to our next paragraph in our model answer, that actually there is a structural transition when the writer shifts into the second person.
That means the writer starts talking to you directly, the audience, the reader.
This invites us into the moment as they enjoy this precious moment at the end of summer. But I think what's quite important here is this is also when we're told that autumn is on its way. And again, as this sets up this symbolic idea that not only is the sun setting at this point in the narrative, but summer itself is ending. Therefore, the structural decision here to include us in this is that we become part of Cromwell's sense of loss, a sense of time moving on beyond their control.
Yes.
And it ends, therefore, although it ends with this optimistic dialogue that shows their friendship, there's the sense, perhaps, you know, will this last through the autumn and through the winter?
It's certainly hinting that this is not going to remain the way. So if we step back and look at that very briefly as the whole kind of thing, we started in the sky with this great sense of freedom and joy, but also a hint of sadness coming from the loss of Cromwell's family. We then move back down to the earth and see that the men are delighting and enjoying in this same freedom. But then very subtly, the tone begins to change into one of both officialdom and hard work, but also suggests that this joy is going to... Yeah, absolutely. That this joy will not last forever, that the summer is ending both literally and also perhaps metaphorically. There is something more unpleasant on the horizon for these men.
So to sum up what we've done there for, we've looked at where does the focus change, what does it change to, and why does the writer do it? What does it set up about characters? What does it foreshadow? What does it set up about the story?
Yes.
So, do you want to introduce the second extract that we're going to look at?
So we're going to go straight into another question three. So this is from a novel called The Reluctant Fundamentalist by Mohsin Hamid, and it's in a section of the novel where a Pakistani man named Changez initiates a conversation with an American stranger in a cafe in Lahore. It's a fantastic novel, really interesting themes explored about a man who goes to America, delights in the kind of culture of America, the success he has studying in America, but then his experience of being there changes very dramatically in the wake of the September the 11th attacks, and his life takes on a different path accordingly. But this is from right at the beginning.
I've not actually read it, but this extract is fantastic. It made me order it on Amazon.
It's made the list. Fantastic. It's and again, we're not going to read it to you because of time. We're already 19 minutes into this podcast.
Never fear.
So again, pause your podcast now, go to back to the handout, either on your phone or the version you may have printed out if you're super organised, and read example B, the extract from the opening to the
And remember, active reading. So as you read, think, where does the focus change? What does it change to? And why does the writer do this? What does it say about the character, themes, ideas?
Go and do it. Do it now.
Do it.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. So, the question. This extract has been taken from the start of a novel. How has the writer structured the text to interest you as a reader? What does the writer focus your attention on at the beginning? How and why does the focus change? Are there any other structural features that interest you? So, do you want to quickly skim through a bit of a summary before we analyse it, just to,
yes,
to make sure that people know what's happened in the story?
So, interestingly, all written in the second person, so the language is all coming from the character Changez, and he is talking to the American stranger, but as the reader we feel he's talking directly to us, right?
We are placed in the shoes of the American stranger.
Absolutely. So it begins with him coming up and offering his assistance and introducing himself to the man, but straight away he seems to know an awful lot about this stranger, and they starts making a lot of correct, as it turns out, assumptions about him. He then moves the conversation on to how he knows so much about him, and we find out about his time at Princeton University, which is quite a prestigious university in America. Is it equivalent of Oxford and Cambridge?
Yeah, Princeton, Harvard, they're all the same.
So very much a top university. He talks about his time there, and you learn of the sort of love he had for America, but right at the end of the extract, you get a hint that it was not all like this.
There's a wonderful line he says. In return, we are expected to contribute our talents to your society. Your society, that's a key hint.
Mm.
The society we were joining. And for the most part, we were happy to do so. I certainly was, at least at first. What a fantastic end that hints at the troubles to come.
It's a brilliant ending, isn't it? And I really enjoyed teaching these extracts, actually. I think they're fantastic. So should we jump into the model answer?
Yeah, so I think the first thing to look at is, of course, right at the beginning, the use of the second person. We need to analyse why does the writer do this. So we're placed in this frame narrative. So a frame narrative is when there's a story outside the main story.
Absolutely, yes.
And we're drawn, therefore, into the telling of the tale.
Yes, and this strong voice that he creates straight away, right? I think there's an element of over familiarity, which is really interesting. Straight away, there's almost a sense of discomfort that even though this man is being very friendly and seemingly helpful, he knows so much about this man, and he's not afraid to say it.
And it's this one-sided conversation.
Yes,
you feel slightly ambushed. Imagine if I like to imagine that I was sitting happily in the hall, and some random dude came up to me and started saying all this.
Who seemingly knows everything about you.
Yeah,
it's quite unsettling, isn't it? So we're put in the shoes of the American, as you quite rightly put it, and then also I think a sense of discomfort is a sense of intrigue. We're interested in why this man so knows so much, but also from the tone of the conversation, we're also perhaps feeling a little bit interrogated and wondering why this man is being so overly friendly and knowledgeable about
us. So, obviously there is a model answer. We're not going to read it. We're still going to talk you through it. Where's the first shift that you're identifying for our next paragraph of our answer?
Well, we're moving then from the sort of introduction and the niceties into then the speaker's knowledge of America and, well, both the local area and of America. And then his analysis of the man himself as American. But then the actual action moves, right? And the man takes us into the tea room. And then do you think the mood changes slightly once we get into that tea room?
So the tea room functions as the location in which we will then learn the story. This is the frame narrative of the novel, where we, like the unnamed American, are sat in this room with Changez and we hear what he has to say. So therefore, the suggestion that the American sits against the wall, again, is just this discomfort. So structurally, it seems to foreshadow some sense of tension between the two men.
Mm.
And given we are supposed to align ourselves with the American, we are placed in his shoes through the second person.
Yeah.
It implies that we too perhaps are intended not to trust the speaker. We could call him an unreliable narrator.
It's interesting, isn't it? You've kind of got this juxtaposition between someone who's seemingly being really nice and really friendly, and yet at the same time there's a growing sense of unease. The structure seems to suggest that there's a discomfort in this man who we don't hear anything from, and therefore we too as the reader perhaps feel a slight sense of unease. But then we have a much more sort of profound transition in terms of we move both in place and time, right?
Yeah. So we have a moment where the narrative then shifts to tell us his story about America. So if you want the technical term, this is, of course, a moment of analepsis. But we don't need that technical term to get the mark. In fact, no. You could simply say the writer shifts our attention back into the past.
Yes.
To establish the reason for the character's knowledge of America.
So structurally, we've been given this sort of mystery. How does this man know so much? And then through our shift into the past, that mystery is then being answered.
Yeah. So we'll start off by saying what are we told about the past? But then we've got to say, why does the writer do this? Uh-huh. So while establishing the man's backstory, this part of the text creates a sense of mystery as we learn how the speaker came to be interested in the USA. We do not learn how he came to be here. Indeed, the positive tone he employs when first describing Princeton raises questions about why he's no longer in the country.
Yeah, he talks with Princeton in this incredibly glowing tone. You know, he saw it as this wonderful place. I think he describes the professors as kings and the...
Philosopher kings.
Philosopher kings, absolutely. And yet, he's no longer there. So we're asked this question, why... What the mystery is when he enjoyed and loved the country so much, what has happened since then?
And I would definitely finish our analysis here by zooming in on the final line. Because on this question three, you don't always need to quote. It's not like question two.
No.
But if there's a really important line that you feel structurally is key to understanding the piece, you probably want to quote it. And for me, that is the one when he says he was happy to contribute to society, at least at first. So this ends the piece in a rather ominous tone, suggesting that something went wrong in America, something that, as the title of the novel suggests, may have led him towards radicalisation.
And if you want to find out whether that's correct or not, you'd have to read the novel.
Yeah. So I think, that's the other thing. Link, if there's something in the title that links you to the extract, the reluctant fundamentalist. Fundamentalism being, of course, following, you know, a religion or philosophy in a way that is quite dogmatic, is often extremist in its views. So this certainly implies, I've not read the novel, that this is a man, this perhaps is going to be a story of his radicalisation.
Yeah. Cool. So that is...
To summarise, question three. This is, I think, the hardest question of all the language papers. And given I think English language is one of your hardest GCSEs, I think this is probably one of the hardest questions you're going to do.
Yeah.
Luckily, it's only worth 8 marks. Mm-hmm. So that is 10% of your GCSE language paper one and 5% of your overall language. So do not spend an hour on this question trying to make it perfect.
Keep it in context.
Up to 15 minutes, but remember our top tips. What does the writer focus on where? Mm-hmm. But you're not just doing a plot summary. The most important bit is saying, why does the writer focus on that thing there? Mm. What's the effect? What does it show about characters? What does it show about themes? How does it set up the story?
Absolutely. Do that and you will be absolutely fine, right?
Yep.
Brilliant. Okay, we will be back next time with question four.
Yes.
Fantastic. In the meantime, you can follow us at GRevisionPod on Twitter. You can email us
at englishrevisionpod@gmail.com, and please do rate us on iTunes if you're listening on that platform.
Yeah, Mr. Forster loves reading the iTunes.
I do. It makes him
so happy. So yeah, please do that. Have a lovely week.